A61, number 31B.
Then when you broaden it out and see, yes, mind is that all intelligence. But because it reflects the ideas of spirit, this intelligence is spiritual. It has within itself the power to unfold itself, the power to order things. And you begin to combine intelligence with the ordering of things and the development of things. Can you see? And that intelligence is that intelligence which will always define exactly what needs to be defined. I will know it. So you combine it with soul, with the definiteness of soul, with the definition of soul, with the naming of soul. Can you see? This is what we did day in and day out. You know, in those years of war where we really didn't have, you see, we started with a synonymous term just right before the war. We investigated them for the first time in late 1938 and beginning of 1939, and then the war broke out and that whole group was scattered into the winds. I was then in Switzerland. I had to go home from that study group. But those years, you know, we just all the evening through, I wasn't then in my practice, I had to go to the military service and so on, but my sister was in the practice and my friends and all the students were in the practice. All what we did, we practiced with these combinations. That was our sense, our highest sense at that time. But it had, though this is not a very high practice as considered from our standpoint today, it worked very well and it had the great advantage that it cultured us in the calculus of ideas. So today, I never think of just the intelligence of mind. I think of the intelligence of mind, I hear all the other ideas of spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love blended into it. Yes? Then every idea reflects the infinite one. Though it has the tonality of mind, intelligence, the main tonality of mind, it still, it takes in all the other ideas, and therefore is a compound idea. You see? Intelligence is then a compound idea. It's no more a single isolated concept. It's a compound idea. I compound it through all the other qualities. Can you see? Do that. After you have got acquainted with these ideas of in the list, you see that is the beginning of it, then start out and always blend. First just with one synonymous term to offset its counterfeit. And then in this exercise 8, blend it with all the other ideas, and you also can offset the counterfeits just the same. Just as I've been doing without spelling it out, I have said take intelligence and see that intelligence is spiritual and therefore not material, therefore not dependent on the material brain. Did you hear how I did it? Quite without thinking about it. It becomes natural, you see. So that this intelligence which is spiritual is defining everything absolutely clear so that we don't have an intelligence that comes and goes and is blurred, that offsets. Can you see? It offsets always. It's counterfeit. That's the practice. That's on the level of Christian Science, where it always shows the relationship of truth to error. Yeah. All right. So, I read it to you, what I have stated here, so that I know if you can understand it. I say, make as often as a problem presents itself to you such exercises. See, if during the day something presents itself and you feel I lack freedom, say, what is freedom? Why should I lack freedom? What is freedom? Freedom is an idea of soul. Why is it an idea of soul? And you first ask, why is it an idea of soul? Because freedom means there is no limits. Nothing spiritual is in something. There are no limits to for me and for my capacity and for my abilities and for my faculties and for my actions. There is no limit. Therefore, I'm outside limits. I live in the realm of the unlimited idea. So you have a sense of freedom. What kind of freedom do I have? What is the freedom I want? Is it freedom to get wild? Or what kind of freedom do I have? So you begin to clarify freedom through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. You say the only freedom is to have the freedom of ideas, because that's the only thing that mind presents to me. Mind doesn't present me any other freedom but the freedom of ideas. I have the freedom to think. Huh? And so you start to clarify freedom through mind, and then you go to spirit and say, well, it's the freedom to unfold unrestrictedly, because spirit is unfoldment. Therefore, there is that freedom to unfold and not to be restricted and not to be retrograding or not to be halting. It's a freedom to push forward, because spirit will open up the way, will open up the womb, will separate what needs to be separated, will push out of the way what needs to be pushed out of the way, and you get the terrific sense that that freedom is going to push through any hindrance. Anything that tries to stop it. And so you build it up through all the seven. Then you have a sense of freedom, what freedom is. And then we don't try to find a wrong sense of freedom. Yeah? All right. So take up whenever something comes up in your daily life. For example, when dealing with the idea law, I have just taken here one example, I could have taken any other. It is not enough to know that it is an idea of mind. By blending law with other ideas, a fuller meaning is thereby brought out. For instance, we can see that law is intelligent and powerful, mind, that law brings order, spirit, that it is unchangeable, soul, that it demonstrates itself, principle, that it is eternal, irrepressible, life, that law has dominion, truth, and operates within a purposeful plan, love. So in this way you have elaborated the idea law through the seven. Make these blendings of idea a daily habit, so that ideas are no more isolated ideas. Is that clearly stated? So again, it's only a habit, just an in-between exercise as often as possible. So actually, I haven't yet given a proper assignment. All right. Now comes the proper assignment. The proper assignment is a nice study, a very warm study, a very practical study, and is something that does not need to further instruction or knowledge than what we have already acquired through the first syllabus up to now. But it is a nice application. Namely, we have up to this point, except for the perhaps handling of evil, which is a right point. Oh. I have left out something. Must just put it down that I don't forget it. Yes. So, we have been considering, so to say, all these ideas and synonyms without really putting it into a whole story. We have seen it as a spiritual presentation of the whole. An example. How it works in the human. Usually that's a reaction that most students have who are not trained to think in abstract way. They always feel, give me an example, show me how it works. So I would like you to make a study of one nice big example which symbolizes our whole life, each one's whole life. Namely, I would like to that you take the story of Samuel, that is, the book of Samuel, and make a little study of it. And I say a little study, not a big study. I repeat it again, make a little study of it, and don't make a big study of it. Because if one wants to take the Bible and really wants to dig into every word and every verse, you can make out of Samuel a life work easily. But that's not really the purpose of what we want to do. Let me first show quickly or state quickly why I have taken Samuel as an example. Samuel, as you know, is the story actually of David. David is shown as a little boy of an insignificant family of the smallest tribe, and he was the smallest boy and the youngest boy. He was really insignificant as a shepherd boy. But he became king and the first king of both realms of Judah and Israel. So what is the story? The story tells us how from an insignificant starting point we can become king, the highest. It therefore shows a life biography, a spiritual biography of man. How from the smallest he became the greatest. And it shows the law ruling this development. It's again the law of creativity that is presented here as a life story. There is in the text, in the Old Testament, practically no other story that shows the whole life of somebody as how he can evolve his manhood and womanhood, his ideahood. There is naturally also Moses, that the story of Moses also gives the story of Moses from a little child up to the leader. But he shows much more the idea of leadership than of manhood. He's much more the leader, and actually he didn't see the promised land. He saw the promised land, but he never got into it. Whereas David, he took in the kingship of Israel. He became actually king. So the story of David is actually the story of a man. The other story of a man is Jesus' story in the Bible, but that story is again different because it goes out from God and shows the translation of God to man as the impact of the Christ. Whereas in the Old Testament we have still the word order, and therefore shows the law of creativity, how we mortals, who seem that we are insignificant, the smallest of the smallest, how through spiritual consciousness we can master our life so as to be king in Israel. We would therefore study not David, but our biography. Now, I have taken that because John Dolly has shown us that whole story in the 7x7. That is, he has shown that the whole life of David evolves through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And then the story ends. So the main tone that runs through that whole story is a story actually not of David, but a story of mind and of spirit and of soul and principle, life, truth and love. Therefore, if we know the ideas of mind, spirit and soul, we can detect in the Bible the tonality of mind, then of spirit, and then of soul, of principle, life, truth, and love. Then we have seen in our study that every synonymous term reflects the other synonymous terms. Therefore, the story tells us not only first the main tone of mind, but shows that that main tone of mind can be broken up into the subtones of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So the second main tone of spirit is broken up again in the seven as spirit, as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And so each one, so that we have seven main tones, each one in its seven subtones, which gives a whole pattern, a matrix of seven by seven. Therefore, a perfect symmetrical presentation of the laws of being. This is the way that Mrs. Eddy afterwards, in most of the chapters in the textbook, will present the chapters in the textbook, like prayer is built up the very same way, the seven by seven. So we could have taken just, in place of Samuel, we could have taken a chapter on prayer and see and culture our blendings there. But I felt we haven't talked very much about the Bible yet, and the Bible is so nicely illustrated and gives such a clear, practical illustration that it may be nice once to have a biblical symbolization for the seven by seven, for the blendings. Now, the task is easy because Mr. Dawley has already written about this 7x7. It's a little volume of this kind. It's the Talks on the Signs of the Bible. It's volume 5, I think, 1st and 2nd Samuel. And there is somebody here next to me who likes to sell you that book. He likes to take the orders of it, and it's only a book of only 180 pages, and in this book John Dawley shows the 7x7. He will, wherever he does it, he is not very systematic about it, because that was not his contribution. He was a great visionary, and so perhaps sometimes we have to read through the book and to find out. He would, here and there, he would state what is the main tone of mind. And then he would state and spell it out what is mind, and mind as spirit, and mind as soul. So it's all in the book. You don't have to find it out from the Bible, but you have to read his explanation and find it there. But he does not always put those epitomes, he calls them epitomes, when he puts into one sentence the tone of mind as mind or mind as spirit, he calls these epitomes. He doesn't always use the same wordings for an epitome. He changes them a little bit, but the tonality is always there. So it is left to you to choose or to build up that epitome which you like to do, which you like to take out of the text. He may have about mind as mind, certainly about 5, 6, 7 different epitomes, but they all mean the same. The terms may change a little bit. So it isn't, it is quite good that you see that, so that you free yourself from the letter and get the spirit. So what you should do, or what you could do, and you will see you get quite a kick out of it. It's really a terrific story, you know. Is to read John Dawley's book on Samuel. You don't need to read the whole book in the Bible. Not even that, I ask. He takes those verses from the Bible which he feels is appropriate for the subject and prints it there. So as you read John Dawley's book on Samuel, you get more or less the story of Samuel, the incidences, and then he explains it, he translates it into the metaphysical language, explains it, and then finally he epitomizes it. So what you have to do is very little. It's just to read it and ponder it and see what it means, to get the tonality of it, and perhaps, and then write out for yourself only the epitomes which you want to write out. So that you have for 7 times 7, just 49 epitomes. Take one page for a main tone. You have one page, you put on the top of the page mind, and then you put in the epitomes you like to put in. And then you take mind as mind, and then you put in the epitome of mind as mind. It's usually just half a sentence, half a line. Not the whole composition, just half a line, that's quite enough. And if you like, in order to have always an example for that metaphysical statement, perhaps you put perhaps in another color, in red or so, or in another type, so that you see it, perhaps just in one line also what is the biblical happening in it. Huh? And then go through it. It cultures then your tonality. You begin then to hear the 7x7 through the illustrations of the Bible. And they are very practical, and every time know that it is our life story and not David. All right. I try to show it like this. Don't try to write it down. Take the book of The Signs of the Bible by John Dawley, volume 5. 1st and 2nd Samuel. The book of Samuel presents the David story in 7 main subjects, following the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Each main subject is further presented in 7 sub-subjects, making all in all 7 times 7, 49 subjects. John Dawley has given the spiritually scientific meaning of the 7x7 subjects. Study Dawley's presentation and extract for yourself a very concise summary, a short epitome, of each of the 7 main subjects, of the same main tones, so that you know mind is this, spirit is this, soul is this, so that you have the whole story of Samuel just in 7, huh? And it's a terrific story, you know. You will see it. Yeah. Then make of each main subject 7 very concise summaries, and then of the 7 sub-subjects, so that the sub-tones are always an elaboration of the main tones. See? Actually, you must see that the main tone of mind goes right through the 7 subtones, because they are blendings. Huh? The 7 subtones are not different subjects, they are all only elaboration of the main subject. If it helps, make an additional note of the main points of the biblical story of each subtone. It may serve as an illustration of the metaphysical sense that is stated. For instance, I just give you the beginning of it so that you have some kind of a notion how you can do it. For instance, see, if you take, for instance, one sheet, huh, always use a normal form, a standardized form with loose leaf. There you write on the top, for instance, mind, huh, as the main tone is the creative parent mind. That's perhaps in my terms, what is the first big tone in Samuel, the creative parent mind. Can you hear that? That is mind, the creative parent mind. Huh? We had mind is the parent mind, mind is the creative. Hmm? Now, Samuel tells what is that creative parent mind through the subtones. So, Mind does mind. For instance, I tell you the story, what happens there, so that you hear the story. In mind does mind, the story starts with that Elkanah had two wives. One was Peninnah and the other was Hannah. Peninnah means coral, and she was, coral means riches, and Hannah was called Grace. And Peninnah had children, and Hannah didn't have children. Can you see, she was barren. And now the story all goes out from that Hannah, how the Hannah could bring forth a child. And then the story says how Hannah was promised a child. That's the first happening, huh? Now what does it mean? Mr. Dawley would explain, it means that the light of the parent mind breaks on thought. Hannah conceived. She had the promise and conceived. That's the beginning. Huh? You have the wonderful breaking in of the life, of the light of mind, of the parent mind that says, you can conceive. Mind conceives. Then the story goes on, comes to spirit, mind of spirit, where Hannah did bear a son, and Samuel was born. Can you see, when you know mind and spirit, huh? Mind is the creative mind that conceives of an idea, of the prophecy. Spirit says, I bring forth, I give birth. So Hannah brought forth the son. Huh? So you have here that the light of the parent mind is manifested in true birth. That's how John Dawley epitomizes it. Huh? Now first you have mind conceives, mind gives birth. Can you see? It's a development of that parent mind. Then let's say another one, soul. And the story goes on, where Hannah, out of gratitude that she was no more barren and could give birth to a son, she said, I will devote and sacrifice that son to the Lord. It should serve always, it should always be the Lord's. He should then go to be a priest with Eli, and so she devoted it to the Lord. She identified her idea with the highest, with the Lord. You can see she gave now to the idea mission, divine destiny, soul that always defines our mission. So Samuel was identified with the Lord, and at the same time the children of Peninnah were rejected. Soul rejects, huh? Soul rebukes. The spirit, the material sense was rebuked. The child of material sense, of Peninnah, the coral, the material riches, was rebuked. They were not allowed to be the priests of God. Can you see how the idea flows? Huh? So in very short epitomes, you just can epitomize 7 times 7 the whole story of David. And you will see that if we put ourselves, identify ourselves with that law, we will be able to give birth to ourselves. We'll show that no matter if we feel we are barren and have no child, that our life is fruitless, hopeless, without any sense, that we are depressed like Hannah was depressed, that there is a law, a spiritual law, a metaphysical law, which says, I can rectify that. I can make out of a barren consciousness, I can make the King of Israel. Wouldn't that be a terrific sense to see? And these 49 steps show us all the dangers that David had to meet, and all the faults he had to meet within himself, the many mistakes he made, and that no mistake in him could ever be a hindrance for him. He could master them and make always a blessing of them. So we get really a very living, huh, A very practical, a life near story there. Okay. So that would be 9. Then we would come to the next one, 10, which is also a side line, which I can state very quickly. Namely, I would like you to ponder and use scientific obstetrics in your study. 10 is scientific obstetrics. I'm going to present the subject of scientific obstetrics tomorrow, and you can have it on tapes, but that would only be an indication of what it implies. I like you to have the tapes as a guiding line, but I don't like to think that they are taken as a rosary. That all what one does with the tapes is to listen to them, and nothing else. They should only be a key for a method how to work,